trusted name and quality work. From drywall and painting to full kitchen and bath remodels, pressure washing, flood and fire restoration, even sandblasting, gutter cleaning, driveway surfacing, and log home restoration. Summer or winter, they'll even go remote. Serving Alaska statewide with over 20 years of experience. Call 907-378-5610. Remodel, restore, big or small, they handle it all. Your upgrade starts with 49th State Remodeling and Restoration.
KFAR weather.
Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Highs around 65. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. 53 tonight. Slight chance for scattered showers. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, slight chance for isolated rain showers. Highs level off around 73. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And we're back on Problem Corner, and our guest today is Joni Skilbred, and we're talking about ice.
Yes. When we left off, one of the ice boats, refrigerator boats that brought meat to Dawson, Fairbanks, and all the points along the river, one of them burned in the 1906 fire. And I'll finish up. These boats were really important because they didn't have a lot of meat preservations in these newer camps. You know, this was when Fairbanks was really new. So when one of these camps was built, one of the important things to do would be to build some kind of a warehouse to keep ice. The ice was for your stores that sold perishables, and for the saloon trade. Ice is kind of necessary if you're going to run a bar. And then, you know, some people use it for household use. And so when Fairbanks was first founded, immediately there was going to be this need for ice, which means somebody's, you know, there's a whole enterprise around it. Somebody's got to cut the ice. Somebody has to arrange for the storage of the ice. And then you have to have a distribution network for the ice. And so, you know, this is part of building a community.
So where did we store this? Was this in an underground cache? I mean, how the ice can only last for so long.
No, it was stored in above ground buildings. They would just take a big warehouse, you know, build a big building, and you would store the ice in there, and you would insulate it with sawdust, usually. If you didn't have sawdust, whatever you had.
Maybe moss.
But when you have a building that's, you know, like thousands of square feet and you fill it with block ice, that building, that ice is going to last a long time just on its own, you know, just the sheer volume of it. I mean, look how long it takes at the snow dumps.
Yes.
For the piles to melt.
And those are exposed and they're not solid. Yes.
Right.
So would this last all summer then? This is fascinating.
Yes. One would hope.
I guess depending on our latitude, right? And you know, if we had a Mother's Day snow.
Depending on the temperature, you know, the climate of that summer season, depending on that and depending on demand.
So how was it distributed?
Well, it was distributed by wagons, you know. So you had your commercial customers who you would distribute it. You had the wagon, you know. They had several wagon services that went around town. You know, they had the honey buckets, they had the water delivery, and they had the ice delivery, and then they had the wood delivery. And sometimes I did find some ads where the wood saw guy would also deliver ice. He was, you know,
sure,
double dipping. But it was, you know, that was for household use. And also with the commercial, they would just have big wagons that would deliver on a regular basis to these. They had these rooms that were built in the restaurants, the marketplaces, you know, like Wechter Brothers was the meat market. and they had these rooms, and so they would put the meat in there, and they would have the ice in there, and you had to have that regular supply of ice. Now, if there was a shortage, then the commercial customers took preference over household. Because the city's meat supply was at stake, you know. I mean, if you're a household owner, you can just go buy your meat every day. Yeah. That was good. So, you know, this whole network, and, you know, so you got to think about these stores. They weren't as big as the stores that we have today, but they had to give up a lot of room just to handle your dairy products, your meat products, some of your produce, you know, all of that had to have ice.
I guess the steamboats at the time would need that as a commercial operation for the people they were serving.
They would
I wonder
need ice.
How much they could transport to maybe. I'm wondering what the range would have been for the distribution for this ice. If our community harvested enough, how much you would be able to put.
I don't think we exported out of the community. But so when a boat was at the dock and it was getting ready to leave Fairbanks and it was being loaded with supplies, some of those supplies would have been ice because they have to have food storage on the boat. So that would be where the ice is going to leave Fairbanks.
So I love learning these new things, and I have my, I'm not a historian as you are, but I am a history junkie a little bit. And, you know, I follow, Title Aid and subsistence, and we have things enshrined for subsistence water in our water rights in Alaska. Mm-hmm. We have subsistence gravel and subsistence wood, and not very many people know that. I haven't seen any references to our subsistence ice, even though that's water that's frozen, but that's how we perfect our water rights is how much water you've used. But now my light bulb is going on about communities needing ice.
Right. Well, it was a huge need before modern electric refrigeration. They went through a lot of it. And every saloon in town in Fairbanks, I think half the businesses in Fairbanks were historically saloons. And, you know, they went through a lot of ice. You know, that was, you weren't going to get anywhere if you served your customers warm beer. So, you know, those were pretty much the needs for it at the household level. It started out, there were different ways to have refrigeration in the home. And what is interesting, you know, it starts with the hole in the ground.
That's the first place my mind went, right.
Right. Our ground is cold. You can have the
permafrost.
Hole in the ground. Yes. And I am somebody who has done that. And it works pretty good. It doesn't keep it quite cold enough. The stuff at the bottom of the hole is colder than the stuff up towards the top. It's also, you can't have a big hole. It has to be small. If it's a big hole, it won't keep everything cold enough unless you put ice in it.
Well, and how many critters can find your underground stash?
Right. And if you add ice to the hole in the ground, now you got a pretty nice ice box. Your ice will last a long time. But there's a price to pay. A couple.
We'll be right back.
Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 668.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. We just got a decision from the Federal Reserve keeping its key short-term interest rates unchanged. Fifth time this year, brushing off repeated calls from President Trump to cut them. The Fed's decision leaves the short-term rate about 4.3% where it stood since after the central bank reduced it three times last year. The Senate passing the Van Orden bill, which helps keep veterans keep their homes. President Trump explaining what his administration is going to do for these veterans.
My administration is committed to doing everything possible to ensure that our veterans are treated with respect and treated as well as anybody in this country. They're so important. They're so great. They've suffered so much.
The White House also announcing a 25% tariff on goods coming in from India, plus additional import tax because of India's purchasing of Russian oil. On Truth Social, the president says India is our friend, but tariffs are far too high on American products. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports that Governor Mike Dunleavy allowed three bills to become law this week without his signature, creating two fishing-related laws and one that updates the rules governing accountants in the state. Under the Alaska Constitution, a governor may sign a bill into law, veto it, or allow it to become law by taking no action on it after it is transmitted to him by the legislature. House Bill 31 from Representative Luis Stutes of Kodiak eliminates a state law that required fishing boats to register with the Alaska Division of Motor Vehicles every 3 years. Now, any boat that's actively in use fishing and registered with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and the U.S. Coast Guard will not also have to register with the DMV. The second fishing-related bill was House Bill 116, which allows commercial fishing cooperatives to act like insurance without being regulated like insurance. House Bill 121, which also became law this week, lowers the training requirements for new accountants if they can substitute experience for classroom time.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
AI can't get your cell phone up and running. A chatbot can't install your new car battery. And no streaming tutorial can shoot the breeze like your go-to guy at your local Batteries Plus store. At Batteries Plus, our go-tos are here to make sure you're good to go. Batteries Plus, the experts in charge.
Dropping trees, grinding stumps, and removing brush. That's just some of the services provided by Buck and his crew at Fairbanks Stump Grinders. It doesn't matter if it's hot and sunny, cold and rainy, windy, smoky, snowy, or freezing temps. The U.S. Mail Service got nothing on these guys. Fairbanks Stump Grinders are some of the toughest cats around, and they're relentless. They're also professional, reliable, and affordable. So if you got trees, stumps, brush, or a combo of all three, they got you covered, no matter what the conditions. That's Fairbanks Stump Grinders, online at FairbanksStumpGrinders.com, or simply call 45-STUMP.
Every day a mystery unfolds at lunchtime. Why are people vanishing from their offices, their homes? Where are they all going? The answer lies in a delicious enigma, Giraldo's. An all-you-can-eat Italian pasta buffet, Italian sub sandwiches, brick oven pizzas baked to perfection, and a plate of classic pasta. But the secret weapon, a homemade pepperoni stromboli. Are you ready to uncover the truth? Giraldo's for lunch, where the mystery of your midday hunger is solved.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
And we're back on Problem Corner. We are talking about ice. And where were we, Joan?
Well, we were talking about the hole in the ground for keeping your food. The problem is that you have to go up and down into the ground, as you mentioned, rodents. And
well, I
also
thought even bears, if I was storing my meat down there, would someone find it if they woke up hungry?
Well, you can put it down in your cabin floor. But the other problem is moisture and air control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a big problem. And so if you could contain it where it's up off the floor, you're not going to have rodents getting in it. You're not going to have spiders, bugs, not as much mold.
I was wondering, I'm sensitive to the mold and wondered, you know, what kind of microbiotics would be trying to be there. And this is river ice, not like the glacier ice that we would sometimes get down in Juneau.
Right. So the ice boxes, so there was a big market for ice boxes, and you could import them. And I mean, a lot of people know what an ice box is, you know, before modern refrigerators, usually made out of the fancy ones, quarter sawn oak and all of that. But there was a big business in Alaska building ice boxes out of white spruce.
Okay.
And, you know, so you had the compartment for the ice. You had to have a catch system, some kind of a drain that went down to the bottom and a drawer that you could pull out, and you had to empty the water out. And then you had your compartments, and these would be insulated, this ice box, and then you had your food storage compartments. Now,
so I'm thinking, again, how big these must be. We just talked about commercial
not
space.
That big.
No, not that big? Okay.
For home use.
Yeah, okay.
They're pretty small. So you would keep your meat, your eggs, your milk, you know, that kind of stuff in it. So when you use this, you have this compartment, and you're going to get your block of ice. The compartment was sized for the standard size block of ice. And you didn't want to let your ice melt down much more than halfway. You need to add more ice. If you let it go down below half, then the ice isn't going to keep the ice box cool enough, the food in there, for it to be safe. And I saw recommendations where maintenance, you should open it every day. You should brush off the block of ice with ammonia water.
What?
And then use charcoal for odor control and scrub it out. But if you open that every day and you do all of that, you lose all your heat. So
right.
I don't think that was...
Was this marketing to buy more ice?
Well, this was in a newspaper article, how to maintain your ice box. So I don't think that most people did that. But it was critical that you kept enough volume of ice in the box for it to work. So your leftover ice, you would be doing, put it in your drinks, melt it and drink it. You would use it for other purposes. And so, you know, every other day or so, you would be getting this block of ice to replace what you had used in your fridge. As to how expensive it was versus today's electric refrigerator, I don't know. But it was what we had, and it was better than nothing.
So I had a question about where it's coming from, because obviously you said that we're harvesting it. We have this community supply. Was that, municipal, or was that a business that someone started?
Oh, it's all private business.
Okay.
There's no municipal anything.
Right, okay.
It's all private business.
So it's community ice, yes. but it's business ice.
Yes. And the ice is, it was harvested. It could be harvested from the river. It could be harvested from a lake, you know, a nearby lake, which is preferable considering that until 1963, 100% of the wastewater in Fairbanks went directly into the Chena River without treatment.
And we wonder what happened to the salmon.
You didn't want ice from the Chena if you could help it.
So when it was harvested, did they wait to chop it up in the layer, or did they pump it into a mold? How did they get it?
No, they cut it. They cut it with big saws by hand, and you would go out and you wanted big uniform blocks, and they would measure it off, and they would make them that exact size that they were looking for, because then, you know, you want that as solid a mass as you can have with no air gaps when they would put it in the warehouse. And then a little bit later, you started seeing these ice boxes that were all made out of metal, and some of them would incorporate a fan.
Ah.
And then it transitioned into refrigerators, which more like what we have today. And also to mix in there, when I lived in Livengood, I had a propane refrigerator. You can still buy those today, but in the 30s, they had those.
Oh, I had one in my cabin just a few years ago.
They worked great. And they also had kerosene. And one of my neighbors in Livengood had a kerosene fridge that worked great. So, and those were mostly an ammonia-based solution, you know, to provide the refrigerant to cool the food. So everything was great. You couldn't really get household appliances in Fairbanks, so you didn't start seeing modern refrigerators until the 30s. And even these fancier ice boxes you wouldn't see in Fairbanks until after the building of the Alaska Railroad, because you couldn't get it up here. Everything had to come by boat, and food and mining supplies took precedence on those boats. Anything else, you probably weren't going to get it.
Does not ship to Alaska.
Does not ship to Alaska. But the railroad, the building of the Alaska Railroad really brought Fairbanks into, you know, the modern world. And so you started seeing people getting more modern appliances. Switching over to electric fridges was a little bit slow. It wasn't until the late 30s, early 40s, and only the wealthy people in town. As late as 1960, there were still a lot of people using ice boxes in Fairbanks. They didn't have electric fridges, so I was really surprised to know that.
Isn't that part of our Fairbanks mentality, though? I mean, my mother didn't understand why I was living in a cabin while I was working in the mayor's office, and I said, my pipes don't freeze. My rent's $4.25 a month. I don't need this other stuff.
Oh, yeah. I did the non-plumbing thing for many, many years, and life is much easier when you don't have it. And you can go away for a month and you don't have to worry.
So that's Fairbanks, since we aren't tied into the power grid. I don't really want to run a generator. My icebox is fine.
Yeah. And up here, we naturally have other workarounds. Summertime is when you have the ice problem. In the winter, I mean, all of us, right. you put the milk on the floor by
yes,
the door.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the beer goes on the other side of the door.
Yes.
Yeah. So
where it gets a little draft every time you open it at 30 below, stays cold enough.
And, you know, we have that in the winter, but we don't have it in the summer. And look at the last couple of weeks. I mean, Fairbanks can get quite warm in the summertime.
Yes.
And it, so, you know, you need to have a way to preserve your food.
So we slowly started transitioning after
yes.
the railroad started bringing things up that they didn't even advertise up here because you
right.
couldn't get it. And
the first electric refrigeration that was put in Fairbanks was the commercial ones.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
They started.
Yeah.
They started the stores. They also started bringing in. Once the technology evolved far enough, they brought in the electric ice making machines, so that you can make your own ice on site, like you see at hotels and bars and
right.
places like that, restaurants now. So that was. A real game changer. And then household electric refrigeration followed that, because you only have so much availability to bring these items in. So that was, you know, that was the household use was a little slower. So we were behind the rest of the nation when it came to converting to electric refrigeration.
And you said there were some historic things going on with tariffs around the time they finally became available anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't want to buy anything new. You don't. 10% on cosmetics, 5% on fridges, 5% on safe deposit boxes, you know. It was just insane. And you're going to deal with this financial crisis where nobody has any money. We're just going to tax the heck out of everybody, and that's going to solve our problem. And that's why Hoover's not remembered very well. He's, you know, history wasn't kind to him. And so FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when the elections, Hoover was voted out, and FDR came in, and he repealed the 18th Amendment, which was prohibition. And he said, we're not going to do this anymore. This is killing people. We got to put an end to this taxation. And so when he repealed the 18th Amendment, he switched it over, and that's when we got liquor taxes. He said, we can make all this money off of alcohol and not punish, you know, families and struggling households in this way, and make all this bureaucracy and reporting and everything else is expensive, and the minutia of all of it. He says it's just easier to tax alcohol.
It was easier to get ice.
So, yes, so we could all drink cold drinks and help the government while doing it. And we're still doing it today. So, you know, it was a win-win-win, and Hoover was banished to the basement
of
history.
He was put out on the ice.
He was. Yes. So that was in a nutshell, I guess.
Well, let's go to a break real quick, and then we will come back with more Problem Corner.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Hey, this is Melissa, and I want to talk about insurance. I had been with GEICO for 10 years. Everything was going fine until my son got his driver's license. When we added him, our rate skyrocketed. We were suddenly paying a fortune. We didn't really know there were better options, so we just paid it. Then I heard about the Loa Carroll Hubbard Insurance Agency. I gave them a call, and thanks to Loa, I'm saving over $430 a month. I couldn't believe it. Call the Loa Carroll Hubbard Agency at 907-474-8002. You might be surprised how much you could end up saving.
Oh, I'll meet you at the market. I'll meet you at the market. Oh, I'll meet you at the market.
The Tenenbaum Valley Farmers Market is open Wednesdays 11 to 4, Saturdays 9 to 4, all summer long. Come find the freshest Alaska-grown produce and the finest Alaska-made products. Come see us at the Tenenbaum Valley Farmers Market all summer long.
Oh, I'll meet you at the market.
It's Senior Day at the Tanenaw Valley State Fair. That means seniors, 60 and older, receive free fair admission and a free luncheon under the Big Top at noon. Enter the free pie eating contest. Stroll by the antique tractor display. Keep an eye out for Elvis. More music, more dance, and magic by Robbie. Enjoy free exhibits, unique shopping experiences, heavenly fair food. Find it all on your free fair app. Get where the fun is. The Tanenaw Valley State Fair, now through Sunday.
The Alaska Fun Center Summer Sales event is going strong. The best CF Motos, Kawasaki, and Yamaha lineup now on sale. Come by the showroom to see the huge selection of ATVs and side-by-sides, all priced right. Check out the Kawasaki Terex 800 with a 3-year warranty. The CF Moto U-Force 1000 XL offers room for six. There is much more to see at Alaska Fun Center, including the Yamaha series of sport quads. Financing on approved credit. Alaska Fun Center on College Road across from the fairgrounds.
KFAR weather.
Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon. Otherwise, overcast skies. Daytime highs approaching 65. Winds out of the southwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Lows dip down to about 53. Mainly cloudy skies expected. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
We're back on Problem Corner, and we're moving into the next phase of history. We have everything very orderly broken out here for today's program. And so we just got done with the tariffs and FDR repealing things. So we tax booze, not ice.
Yes.
Ice for everyone. And we just put...
No, we tax booze, not refrigerators.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
And so we put Hoover out on the ice floe.
Yes. And so now people would go out and buy refrigerators and all of that. But still.
And we could get them in Fairbanks with the railroad.
Still in Fairbanks. A lot of people didn't have power and they clung to those old ice boxes. And we'll fast forward to 1953.
Okay.
And Fairbanks, Murray Smith, prior to 1953, he was the Fairbanks Iceman for many years. And Bill Fitzgerald had just gotten married, and him and his wife had experience working in breweries, and they came up to Alaska. There were two breweries here.
You'll have to do one on a history of Fairbanks breweries soon.
Yeah. So anyway, they decided, okay, we'll take a job with one of these breweries. We're going to go to Alaska. And they got here, and the breweries went out of business. And like many people that get here, don't have two nickels to rub together. And, oh, my gosh, now what are we going to do? Look around. And so he ended up getting in working for an ice company. And Murray Smith wanted, he had been running his business for a long time. He wanted some time off. And he said to Bill, he says, well, I'm going to go to the States for a year. You run my business for me. And Bill said, okay.
How did it work out?
Well, Bill ended up buying the business.
Okay.
And so in 1953, he was the Fairbanks Iceman. And the warehouse was out there by where 23rd, I think it is, in Cushman, the market. There's a big store.
Oh, yes.
Well, that building behind there is really big. That's the old ice warehouse.
Oh, wow.
And Pat Fitzgerald, if you're listening, this is your dad. And I'm sure he knows the story too well. But anyway, so Bill, he took over the business and he's delivering ice around Fairbanks. He said that if somebody left town and they had one of these old ice boxes, Bill had no trouble selling it. You know, people still wanted their ice. Well, the spring of 1953 was warm and there was an early breakup and they were cutting the ice, and breakup came a little early and it limited their ice supply in the warehouse. Now, they used to cut the ice on the Chena River, and then they moved to
a cleaner
local,
source.
the gravel pits out by the airport.
Yes, yes.
So they moved it to there. So, yeah, but anyway, so they didn't have quite a full warehouse, and it was a hot summer, and they ran out of ice. And it was a crisis.
What did that do to families? What did that do to tourism?
Well, yes, and what did that do to business? You know, the bars, they don't have ice. The restaurants don't have ice. The households don't have ice. And so Bill,
we can drink warm whiskey, but what about our meat?
Bill, being, you know, this is the classic Alaskan. Okay, well, let's come up with a workaround, you know. And so he went, all right, we're gonna go down the ridge, and we're gonna go get ice off of one of them glaciers.
Okay.
So first he tried getting ice from the Columbia Glacier from the fishermen in Valdez, but that didn't work out so well. He couldn't control the size of the ice, and it was kind of expensive.
That's a long way to transport it.
Yeah. Then he looked at the Kastner Glacier and Black Rapids Glacier, but he didn't have good access to them, so he settled on the Worthington Glacier. And at that time, you could drive right up almost next to the Worthington Glacier. And they took a boiler and they burned down holes and they would put dynamite in it. And then they would do a blast and off would come these big chunks. And he had heavy equipment there, loaded on semi-trucks and send it up to Fairbanks.
Wow.
And he was supplying everybody with 18 million year old ice.
Right.
And him doing this made newspapers all over the lower 48, you know, that Fairbanks was out of ice and they were using the glacier.
Raiding the glacier.
Yes, yes. But, and he did it several years when ice got low. He went down and got glacier ice.
Well, he had a system.
And was able to make money doing it. And he said that one blast that he did went a little unplanned. They had the truck parked. They did the blast, and this big chunk went flying through the air, crashed through the top of the trailer that they were going to load it in, and loaded itself, kind of.
Wow. And probably broke the axles.
They just drove it straight up.
Wow.
Yeah. But also,
it's like out of a cartoon or something.
Yes. And also in 1953, the first two truckloads made it through, and then big rainstorms hit. The rest of it, the road washed out. By the time they got the rest of the ice to Fairbanks, the heat wave was broken and it was cold. And
okay.
And nobody was thrilled to have ice, you know. It was like, wah, wah, wah. Uh-huh.
it's like when Costco's out of air conditioners when we have a heat wave, and then they get them in stock and I don't need one anymore.
In February. Yeah. 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 And you look at it and you go, yeah. So it was, it was really interesting that he did this. And today we still have the ice business. So think about when you want ice, you can get block ice, you can get cube ice, and we still have icemen in Fairbanks. They had the Jones Ice Company for many years. I'm not sure who's doing it now, but they supply all those ice storage machines and freezers and stuff. You go to the grocery store, the convenience store,
I try to get block ice. And just a couple of weeks ago on Facebook Marketplace, I found one of those countertop ice makers to try and, you know, our freezer isn't hooked up to the water at home. So I thought, oh, I could do this and dump it in the freezer. For $30, I'd try it.
I use milk jugs. Yep. Just don't fill them all the way.
Yeah, I
and
do
then
that.
And you can drink it too.
Yeah. But for the ice that goes in our drinks, I was going to do the countertop. But I do that, too. I get the smaller milk jugs, mm-hmm. and then we use that for trips. Put that in as our ice, and then when it melts, we have water to drink.
Yeah. And so this is, you know, I thought it was just really, really interesting that, you know, I mean, we were selling glacier ice in Fairbanks, and, you know, everybody was thrilled. And I also... A friend of mine told me that the glacial ice is formed under a lot more pressure.
Mm-hmm. It is, yes.
So it's a lot denser.
Yes.
And if you have an ice box and you put glacier ice in there, it's going to last a whole lot longer than...
We did this in Juneau often. It was a big thing. We were Coast Guard, and my dad would go get ice from the Mendenhall Glacier and then serve it at, you know, little Coast Guard cocktail parties. But we had some at home, and it did last longer.
And how did it taste?
Sometimes it tasted a little yucky, and sometimes there was silt in it. But I think that's for, you know, where he was getting it, right? I mean, if you're doing something commercial, you're going to be a little bit different than just a dad who was excited
well,
to go grab some.
Well, that's your proof that you're drinking...
Right.
Aged ice.
We were always worried there was going to be ice worms in it or some prehistoric thing in there.
Oh, yeah. I did a show on Fox Water once, and they had worms in the Fox Water
goodness.
One year. And, oh, it caused quite an uproar in Fairbanks. People were panicking.
Well, you know, we've been talking about the history of ice, and one thing we don't want to forget to mention, because we're both trail advocates and multi-use advocates, in a lot of our listeners follow ANILCA issues and trail access, and mm-hmm. this has ice on the rivers being able to document people's travel has helped preserve navigable waters. It's frozen water, but it's navigable.
Absolutely.
And historic trail use to be able to assert RS-2477s, private or you know, individual, not private, but individual citizen access over trails, where once it's asserted and listed in the USGS, listed on some of the other maps, then it's harder to take our trails away for our public land access, even if it crosses private lands.
I have to say, you know, trail wars and all the politics revolving around trails, you know, it's very tiresome. And, you know, it's like, oh, I just want to use the trail. But I have to say, when you go to the lower 48 and you can't go anywhere,
right? Yeah.
You know, you have to have all these special permissions and everything else. And here, we have so much more freedom because we do organize and protect our trails.
Yes.
Anybody can use our trails. And it's a wonderful thing because when you go down to Lower 48 and you don't have that anymore, you really feel the pinch.
But I'm grateful for today's program because, you know, we've talked about trails. We've talked about food. We've talked about comfort.
Yes.
We've talked about all these other infrastructure, business, economy, that, you know, you take a little subject like ice and we see how many different aspects of our life ice has touched just being Fairbanks residents.
Yes. And national politics, how it affected, you know, Fairbanks' ice situation.
Yes.
You know, the whole thing. So if you got, I was wondering if you got your water delivered and you, or let your ice thaw and then refroze it later on, could you escape the tax? Were people trying to figure out workarounds?
Right. I'm sure Fairbanksons were. And then we didn't even touch on the tourism economy up here. So thank you so much, Joni.
Yes. My wish.